Houston.
Welcome, everyone. The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, please lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We noticed during the Finance Committee meeting, I actually came in kind of toward the end of it, that as we were having conversation, this is room loses voices, and we want to make sure everybody hears us. So we promise to speak up, and we'll make sure. If you can't hear us, do this to me or one of these, and we'll make sure that we speak up. Okay. Mrs. Stecker, please call the roll.
Mr. Sandwood.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
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 Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Here. Thank you. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? I know there were some forms put in. Yeah? Welcome. Yeah. Thanks, Jen. And before, Jen, you start, I just want to, there's many of you who have been to Board of Education meetings and know that this is a regular board meeting, business board meeting, and when we have public participation, which is now, and then it's also at the end of the meeting, so if you can stay for some of our reports, et cetera, which are very interesting, there'll be public participation at the end of the meeting as well, that it's not a time where the board has conversation or interchange, but rather collects the information and then we'll make sure that we respond. And I know that I've responded today to several emails as well as Ann and I think maybe some other board members. So please know that it doesn't get lost in a vacuum, but it doesn't happen in the middle of the board meeting. Right. Thank you.
I'll try and speak loudly. Hello. My name is Jennifer Malik and I'm a D41 parent. By now you all should have received an email letter from myself, Liz Vogel, and Kristen Travers addressed to Ms. Sensory-Box sharing our concerns about eliminating the library aide and the tech aide positions in the D41 school. The library aide and tech aide are important student-facing resources in the school, and services to students will be lost or compromised if these positions are eliminated and combined into one. The library aide is virtually 100% student-facing position during the school day. The many responsibilities of the position include checking in and out thousands of books per month, shelving books, enforcing circulation rules, cataloging new books, recommending books to students, locating books for students and teachers, placing polls, gathering materials for teachers, and many other day-to-day administrative duties. These duties cannot be covered by the school librarians, who are responsible for teaching curriculum to students just like the other special departments. These duties also cannot adequately be serviced by a part-time media aide, who is also responsible for troubleshooting technology problems, without cutting services to students and teachers and risking substantial losses of the library's book collection. It can be argued that the school libraries are already understaffed, since many of the school libraries rely on significant parent volunteer hours. The tech aide position is currently each school's first line of troubleshooting for technology problems. The tech aides can quickly respond and resolve problems with the network, smart boards, laptops, iPads, netbooks, printers, and software. The quick response time to resolve problems is critical, especially as teachers build lessons around technology, and the need for rapid response troubleshooting will only increase as the district rightly increases its investments in laptops, iPads, netbooks, and smart boards. As the student's school days are tightly planned and lesson blocks, entire lessons can be missed if a teacher experiences a problem with hardware or the network, and it cannot be resolved quickly within minutes. This may make teachers reluctant to plan lessons incorporating technology. In the current organization, the full-time tech aide troubleshoots technology problems quickly with additional support from central services on a tech ticket basis. In the proposed organization, there will be far less support on an immediate basis since the new media aide position will also be attempting to cover library duties. There will be additional tech support from the network specialist, but this position is shared in elementary schools, so there may be a wait of several hours. Longer wait times waste valuable instructional time and disincentive teachers to incorporate technology into lesson plans. The administration's recommendation was intended to provide more resources to resolving tech tickets for more complicated technology problems. We appreciate and applaud the district's investment in technology for the students' benefit. These technology investments come with support costs, which must be managed. However, these investments do not reduce the responsibilities or importance of the library aide, and increase the need for a dedicated technology troubleshooting resource like the tech aide. These positions are valuable and cost-effective solution providers within the schools, and their positions should remain as the administration seeks a different plan to accomplish its important technology goals. Therefore, we are requesting you reconsider your decision to eliminate these positions. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Other members who want to, the public who want to present, is there anything else?
Leslie Kane.
Leslie? Hi. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Leslie Kane, and I'm a first grader here at Churchill. I'd like to comment on the elimination of the library position at the elementary school, and specifically here at Churchill. When I learned the news this morning, I was devastated. My comments are based on personal experience from volunteering in the library since my son began here. I worked full time just this afternoon on because I was scheduled to volunteer in the library. While I was there, I tried to watch what the library committee did in just the 2.5 hours I was there. Of course, she checked books in and out because that is where she works and probably witnessing most of her day too. But I held the circulation while she did the hard stuff. She helped kids find books they were looking for, holding down, and Knights of the Round Table. Another little girl came up and asked her suggestions of what books to read on spring break. So the library aide walked around the library talking about some series the girls might enjoy and what would last for school vacation. Another little boy had picked a book about birds, and he was so excited he stood at the desk and looked at the pictures with her. These are things an iPad cannot do. When she had spare time, she was putting protective covers on the books and logging them into the computer. I also know that she knows what books are good for different levels, and she also knows which level many students are reading at. And she knows their names, all of them. This is the library aid you want to eliminate. This is a bad decision that reflects poorly on the value you place on books in our children's lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Jennifer Lindstrom.
Hi. Okay, I'm Jennifer Lindstrom. I have a son at Ben Franklin, and she went west to went through Ben Franklin. I concur with Jennifer. Thank you for doing it. And I just want to state that I sincerely hope you reconsider the elimination of these two very important student-oriented positions. I feel it completely decreases the quality of both of those positions at the expense of our students.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Is there anybody else who'd like to offer comment at this time? You can give your name to Maureen afterwards if you choose to. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. All right, next on the agenda are presentations, reports, and initiative updates. Each year, I think this is maybe the fourth year that we've been traveling from school to school and moving the board meeting around, which has been a wonderful way to get to see schools and also to be able to have schools present on some of the work that they've been doing. And so our principal, Scott Pluskitz, will be doing that. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm actually going to ask Melon joined me in second grade staff. We didn't really rehearse this or plan this or work this out, but we have a presentation for you this evening that second grade teachers have worked to put together. Give you a little bit of background as to how it came to be. Last month at our continuous improvement meeting, the continuous improvement team meeting, and the principals were asked to give a report out and do some sharing as to how things were going in school and give specific examples of how the learner characteristics are evident in the classroom. So I took that question back to the staff and asked that question.
Thank you.
And second grade team came back to me and said, well, we've got a great example of the learner characteristics at work. And it's through a process we call the great tasks. And so I'm going to let Jeannie, our math coach, explain the great tasks a little bit. And we have student demonstration of the video to share with you to give you a little bit of a better feel for what a great task is. And as you look around the room, there's examples of work as well. So, Jeannie, I'll throw it to you.
I'm here really to celebrate something that the math committee, I'm just one member of a huge team of collaborative adults who have taken some ideas that began with the Common Core State Standards that were published 2 years ago. two summers ago and asked some really good questions about those standards. We dug deep as a math committee and as math specialists with, under the tutelage of Karen Carlson, and we were trying to determine what is going to be different about these standards from what we already do. Where are we going to have to dig deeper, and where are we already just fine? And what we came up with over some good conversations was that our problem-solving scores were flat, and we wanted to stretch our children's thinking in that regard. And the Common Core State Standards, Mathematical Practices, Habits of Mind, are a perfect match for that. Mathematical Practices of Mind in the Common Core State Standards are asking our kids to argue about math, to not have an answer about math. It's not the closed-ended problem where you have the numbers, you look for the word more than, so then you add. It's about a relevant, interesting, deep math problem that doesn't have an answer, or if it does, it's got many answers, and it's got many ways to get to the answer. And we were trying to figure out, oh, how are we going to get our kids there? We had some great resources. The math committee started digging deep, and we determined that we would get rid of the old way of problem solving, and we would start something called the great tasks. The great tasks, like I said, are open-ended, relevant math problems that each task should cover at least one, if not all, of the math content standards, those being algebra, operations, geometry, data probability, all of those that we've already been used to. Common Core just streamlined them and shoved them into four. They're still similar. But moreover, to embed more than one, if we try to do 2 to 4 of the mathematical practices, which is the argument, the relevance, and the kids being able to have some open-ended dialogue and to challenge each other's thinking. So I'm here today to celebrate this school in Forest Glen School. I'm so privileged to be their math specialist, to be able to work with some neat collaborative teachers. Behind me are a number of teachers that are on the math committee, and their work together has really been so positive in this endeavor. You can see they embrace this, they create their own tasks. Each grade level team on the math committee creates their own task and then brings it to their kids. And this particular team asked me to come into this room with all their kids and do the first one. So I thought, okay, this is a little overwhelming for me. I was previously a teacher. I'm in a lot of rooms, including kindergarten. But to have all the second graders in this room at one time, that was just crazy. But they talked to me, and we decided to do it in two separate sessions. We had to negotiate that. So in this room, we had half of the second graders all spread around the floor on their window frames. And the window frame is a really neat graphic organizer that takes away the stress of problem solving, because they're allowed to look at where other kids start. They're allowed to share and think. There's a process that's embedded so that they must speak and they must ask questions of each other. It's really fascinating. I'm here to celebrate this team. They've embraced it. They've done some neat ones. And they're going to share their effort, what their kids have accomplished so far this year.
Well, actually, we are not going to share beautiful and brilliant Julia is going to share the smartphone lesson that we used for our last test.
First, the teachers have a choice for shape.
technical difficulties.
And then we're going to show you a little clip.
I added those
those 2 inches together to get my baby angel, which is 150
Puse los triángulos al más alto y después junté todos para agarrar mi total y mi total era 158. First, the triangles were 3, so I put the smallest all the way to the biggest and I put them all together and my total was 100.
I did first the all the things I kind of did. Then I put the necktie number and I included all of them. I knew it was 18 plus 18 and that was 32. Well, you embarrassed me. And then I got the mushrooms and I figured out what the problem is. And the correct answer is 150.
And the problem was to make a design and make sure there is a line of symmetry. And we also had to figure out what the wrong values were. And we thought it was fast because the triangles were 3 and 2 of the triangles were 3.
Forest Glen and Churchill second graders come together in 2 groups, or just all Churchill and all Forest Glen? Yeah, 2 groups. Yeah. 2 groups in Churchill.
And second grade team, the number of the teachers being on the math committee are a little bit further along with the grade test process than the other grade levels. I think to date we've done 4, or the other grade levels, maybe 2, 3?
Yes, each grade level district wide is required to do 1 per trimester. Mm-hmm. And each grade level does the same one based on what the management
creates.
You can kind of see the progress starting October,
there's
1 in November, January, kind of
progress.
Yeah.
And we didn't really account for the opportunity of the board meeting to be able to see that, but one of the reasons we chose this room is to be able to display that work here. And so an opportunity to take a look at that. Mm-hmm. And also, everyone on your chairs, and I believe this is passed out to you, the copy of the great task that the students used for this project to work on.
Could I ask all the faculty to introduce themselves so we can have names too?
Sure. I'm Linnea Urbanowitz, second grade. My name is Nigette. I'm second grade biological. Susan Dolger, second grade.
Deborah Lazar, second grade. Kim Bedford, second grade.
And what about our students? It's Julia, is it? And what's your last name, hon?
Norton.
Norton, wonderful, thank you. And? You have to speak up just a little bit more. Thank you.
Armin
Ballas. Thank you very much.
Is there anything?
It's usually a 2-day process. You know, we do the extension on the second day.
Yeah. So for the children, you know, what was it fun? Was it hard? We see a lot of words up there, but what did you like about it?
Thanks.
They had to
Mm-hmm. About the great tasks, right.
That was what was so wonderful to me. I mean, I loved it. They loved the great task. We're all very happy when we're doing it.
Yeah.
It's a very, very deep in thought while we're doing it. And one of my students, Alexandra Lindsay, said it all. She said all the strategies were different. They all worked independently at first, and then she said we're able to share. I thought that was so well put. It kind of summed up the entire grade test.
I like the test because we it's judged a way and it was really fun.
Sam, did you have a question?
I was just curious. Each month, is it a different task or is it the same task?
Oh, no, a different task.
And it's all the same. It's all the second grade? These three are the second grade? Well, I just will say that it makes me very happy when I see that the staff, the teachers, and the specialists as well embrace the technology and use it the way it's intended to be used. And it also makes me very happy when I see the kids get up there and do things that I probably couldn't do on myself. So I think it's a great job.
I just wanted to add that this is the second grade. Each task at each grade level varies, of course. One thing I didn't mention about the grade task is that the children need to be precise. Precision is still of the utmost importance when we're doing mathematics. Also involved is how we model mathematics. So these that you see have the same model. They're using the pattern blocks throughout all of their tasks. Each grade level is a little different. And a few weeks ago, I had a friend visiting me when I was at Forest Glen, and I wanted to show this friend a guided math classroom, and we walked into a first grade room, and it was pretty cool, and then we left, and I said, hey, let's go look at fifth grade. And I walked into fifth grade thinking they would be doing guided math, and it just so happened they were doing a great task. Fifth grade, February. We walk in, it is silent, absolutely silent, fifth graders. Facing each other, they have protractors out, they have calculators out, they have tangrams out. And the task was so involved that they could only fit two kids on either on each one of the window frames. And this friend looks at me and says, is this like this all the time? And I said, oh yeah. Oh yeah. You bet. This is what I'm fifth grade. And then I said, well, let's just go see one other. Let's go out to the portables. Let's see if they're doing that. I wanted her to see a guided math room. But instead, we go out to a portable, fifth grade, they're doing the same thing, silent. So now my friend starts walking around asking the children questions. Well, what are you doing? Well, I'm using tangrams to find out the sum of the interior angles. And they're talking through this with this friend of mine who was just dumbfounded, as was I. Because the fifth grade rooms I'm in are a little bit louder. And I will tell you that that was the first day of what turned into a 3-day grade test in which they were comparing, contrasting, and investigating one-step algebra equations with tangrams and interior angles. So, can't really get that with a question that asks about the trains, each departing from two different locations at different times and at different speeds. They were really engaged, and I couldn't have been more excited. I just wanted to hang out in those rooms. I also wanted to share with you the very different per grade level per trimester.
I look back at the learner characteristics that as a learning leadership team that we're trying to promote this year and through our work, respectful, advocate for oneself, resilient, assume responsibility for own learning, think critically, collaborative, engage, utilize organizational skills, mediate conflict, seek challenge. Kind of all wrapped up in there. So it's great.
Thank you, Scott.
And team.
Yeah, and team. Yeah. Thank you, Jeannie. Did you take a picture?
I didn't have a camera. Or my phone.
Thank you very much. Thanks. All right. Next on the agenda are action items, our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
I think the personnel report.
Okay. May I have a motion then to approve the consent agenda, which includes finance, facilities, and operations, other matters including board meeting minutes of February 27th, 2012, the regular meeting, and February 27th, 2012, the regular meeting in closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Chamberlain?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrant?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes. Thank you. Item B, our superintendent's recommendations. There are none this evening.
We do not.
With a smiley face next to it. Okay, superintendent's report.
I just wanted to make one note, given...
Are we going to vote on the full item 7?
I think we'll discuss in closed session and have action taken.
Action taken when we return. Okay. Yes. Okay. In closed session, action when we return.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so...
I just wanted to note, we're having discussions about the library media aides, or the library aides and the tech aides, and... tomorrow, we'll continue our outreach to our internal constituents, would be our staff, and I'll be sending out something to each building, setting up a meeting for those who wish to come talk with me. Board members received two letters, I believe, today that I sent them. And so I'll continue to at least talk with staff at each of the buildings and listen to insights. I appreciate the parent insights that were shared this evening. My hope would be that there are some misconceptions, I believe, in the emails I received today and in the emails that have been circulating that perhaps mischaracterize the reorganization that we have recommended. And hopefully by talking with staff members, we'll be able to increase the knowledge there so that they're able to better answer questions that may come to them from parents or others, including students. And Jody Baltimore has asked that I be available along with Mike Wood to potentially answer questions at PTA Council next week. So we will continue to listen to voices, continue to hear what insights people have, and hopefully others will also be open to listening to the plan that we have placed before the board with an open mind and with some of the resources that we think we've put in place to answer some of those questions. So I just wanted to say that so that board members would be aware we're not letting this fall on deaf ears. That's it. Enrollment is last month we were down about 25 students. This month we're back up to almost the same number we were the month before. So, as you can see, we have a 25 student swing on a regular basis.
I just wanted to mention again on the enrollment report, there's 400, according to my counts, 473 children, students in portable classrooms.
Continue to be housed in portable classrooms. Thank you.
In elementary school.
Correct. Not in Hadley, just the elementary.
Okay, board reports. Are there any board members who wish to give a report at this time?
Yes. Let me see. Sorry, I'm going back. I attended the learning leadership team meeting, and we talked a lot about learner characteristics and some of the presentations that are being held with our staff, and the principals are doing a great job of reiterating that and the people within the building. Couple things, though, just updating on curriculum work, that they are the math committee, it was interesting to have the math committee presentation today because we talked about some of the changes with the Common Core. And from a board perspective, what I took away was we were once again out in front creating assessments, doing work before everybody else, because that's what our staff does. So, but I'm hoping that some of the work that the math committee has done and the assessments that Karen and her teams have created will be able to be utilized with the new Common Core, and she's already done that, but also potentially to let the board know there may be some recommendations coming to us about upgrades within our use of technology to use everyday math applications that we may need some of those upgrades to be able to incorporate a lot of the assessments and stuff that we're doing. But again, just to highlight the fact that Karen and her staff and our buildings were at the forefront and creating these things before our publishers and then before they came through with the Common Core. So they've done a great job with that. And also, Karen and the Foreign Language Committee, it's not really a committee, is that Karen? Mm-hmm. Have been with all of the site visits that we should be getting a recommendation as to moving forward with foreign language within the next couple of months. So, and the 21st century, we talked about 21st century learning and our furniture and the changes within our classrooms, and just sort of a presentation and talking to the staff that are part of the committee about moving forward with that the board did approve some of those expenditures and that we're going out to bid to do that. Excuse me, we did not approve the expenditures. I apologize, but we approved going out to bid to make some, to bid out these projects. So, another wonderful meeting. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Jen. Other reports?
Sorry.
Jen?
Mm-hmm. I attended the Ben Franklin and Churchill PTA meeting. As you can see today, one of the large topics was around reorganization, and certainly opened up a little bit some of the concerns that I think they've expressed to the administration. And I think the key thing for us is to monitor this thing and make sure that we didn't overestimate or underestimate the impact to the kids in the school. That's the message that we do that.
Just a couple things. Finance. Yeah, we've had finance committee. Go ahead, Jim.
Actually, we had two finance committee meetings. One last week and one this and earlier today. So the finance committee last week we discussed the Hadley parking lot project along with the alternates associated with that. That's a discussion item later in the schedule. For later for this board meeting, and then we had three items on the finance committee for this past meeting earlier today. Those items being the copy paper bid, the Hadley yearbook. Printing and a smart music subscription for a band and orchestra. All are scheduled to go to the next board meeting for discussion.
Thank you very much. Four of us attended the Open Meetings Act training, which is part of state law now for board members elected to go through a formal Open Meetings Act training. And so you can either do that through the Attorney General's website, or you can do that through the Illinois Association of School Boards website. Steve has done that. Sam did his training with boot camp as a new board member when he was elected last spring. And then Drew, myself, Ann, and Maureen Stecker attended at Marquardt last week for an evening 90-minute session. And it was very well attended. I was surprised at how many people were there. And Open Meetings Act sounds a little dry. But the attorney, the general counsel, or assistant general counsel for AASB who did it actually did a great job. And there were really two takeaways for me. First of all, to pat our board on the back, and specifically Maureen Stecker, who really is our coordinator for processes and agendas and making sure that we really follow good Open Meetings Act protocol. And so I feel we do a very good job of that. And that was one takeaway in terms of the kind of questions that came up from other board members or administrators who were there. And the second one, that it really pointed out best practices that boards should apply, and that you could do this, but you really should do this, whether it's a roll call for a vote or some other things. And again, I think that we do a good job of following through and formalizing some of that. So it was a good training, and I know that Tara's looking into the online piece too, and John, so looking forward to that, and Dan. One quick thing, this is just for the board, but when we adjourn tonight, if we can make sure everybody's checked in with Ann about the April 16th board self-evaluation meeting time so that we can get our evaluation tools from Barb Tony, who we saw that night at the Open Meetings Act meeting, so that we can get that done for her. So if we can check in with Ann, that would be great. And then finally, we have a policy committee meeting tomorrow, Sam and myself and Ann and Maureen, so we'll be working on more revisions for policy. Anything else? Okay, great. Discussion items.
Yeah? Did either of them have a recording?
No. Did you have anything? Did I miss? Okay.
Sorry. Okay, first discussion item is the Hadley parking lot. And, as Drew mentioned, we had a meeting last Thursday to review the bids from the parking lot. And just as a point of context and reference, we've been discussing the Hadley parking lot since October. And so it has been a well-vetted process with multiple alternatives examined to the final recommendation. We've held open meetings and for the community to attend to look at the various alternatives that we've had. And finally, the board gave us permission to go out to bid sometime in December. And the bids have returned we had some last minute alterations from the village. And so we are really pleased to present the final recommendation for the Hadley reconstruction of that parking lot and the alternatives. So I'm going to let Bob take it from here. And he has both a PowerPoint and also there are, I think, some copies of the slides.
As Drew and Ann indicated earlier, we had a special finance committee meeting last Thursday evening where I presented this very information. Tonight's discussion, we have this Hadley project recommendation as well as the intergovernmental agreement that's being written in cooperation with the city of Wheaton. As this project has parts of Glen Ellen in it, the big parking lot will take place as well as the alternate C1 along Glencoe. So I just wanted to run you briefly through this. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. This is the current configuration of the Hadley site. The architects, in conjunction with administration, staff, police department, and the other village officials have stated certain site issues that occur on the Hadley site as a result of the interaction of student drop-off, in other words, parents, student-parent drop-off, the buses arriving, general traffic up and down Glencoe, just general conditions that exist on that site. So we've talked about safety and congestion down here in the main entrance way to the Hadley site. In addition, safety and circulation issues in this area right here. Number two is where the special education bus drop-off. Three, for anyone that has ever visited the Hadley site or been there during student drop-off, you know that these areas indicated as 3 and 4 here are major drop-off points for parents and parents with their children. Number five is a circulation issue, just in general, in terms of you have bus traffic coming through, you have parent drop-off, you have staff arriving, you have kids walking across the parking lot, which is generally a lot of circulation safety issues. And then again, number six, the area that's indicated here, where the bus pickup occurs in the afternoon. So in the AM, I wanted to highlight that the bus drop actually occurs in the main body of the parking lot. In the PM, in the afternoon, the Illinois Central actually picks the kids up along with them. So at least there is a separation of the kids and parking and traffic. So, again, this is just a slide of the Henry site existing conditions without any identifications on there. Then, this is the Henry site actually how the traffic currently flows. And you can see here by the key down at the bottom, it shows the current bus loading that occurs, actually bus unloading in the morning, and what would be bus loading in the afternoon along Glencoe. It shows the general traffic patterns for parent. You can parent drop off here in the east at the Headley site. You also have some parents that come in this, what is handicap restricted parking as well as special education drop off. Then you have other parents who actually come in, drop off, sort of the main area drop off, which is right in front of the main entrance way for Headley. Special education vans, those are dedicated to pull in off of Hawthorne, drop the students right along. We call Gym A, the main gym at the east end of the Hadley site. And then the parking, as you know, we have some restricted parking, handicap parking, east end of the Hadley site, and then all the parking that occurs in the main parking lot, which is the point of our discussion this evening, which will be the complete reconfiguration, and then actually underground detention in that area. And then just for your additional information, we do have 30, we have several parking spaces on the east end of the property. As a matter of fact, I think there's 60 or 70 parking spots over there. So, what's going to occur? As you know, we had a series of meetings with building staff administration, folks over in the city of Wheaton, and obviously with village officials, the village engineers, public works people, as well as the village manager and the village sort of the person who design as well as the person that we apply for building variances. So again, this is just the base. This is the base of it. What the parking lot will look at, look like once the project is completed, if the board decides to move forward. Just to give you some highlights, we have a special education area that will be restricted for special education drop-off only. It'll be noted on each end of the parking lot here, and this will be constructed so we'll only have one lane of traffic available. It'll only be available to get through one bus. So currently we have our existing special ed drop-off. Buses can stop still, you can find other cars and can scoot through there for parent drop-off or whatever the case may be. That would not be available should this project move forward. Second highlighted area then is the entrance here. This was asked of us by the police department to restrict the flow of traffic going one way off of Hawthorne into the main body of the parking lot. They do not want to see two-way traffic sort of be able to get in and out of the lot along Hawthorne. They wanted to maintain this way. In other words, one entrance way in. I will tell you that we had some reservations about this, and I spoke to Bill Homer, Assistant Police Chief, and he asked that we just give this some time to see how it works, and if we have some issues, just go back and talk, and we'll take a look to see if we need to go make a different change here. So I'm a little concerned about traffic, and the fact that only one lane of traffic is allowed to go in or out here, but again, we can have those conversations as this project moves forward. And as school starts up next fall, we have complaints from citizens, from parents, and so forth. This will give you an idea of the traffic flow. If you come in off of Hawthorne, traffic will travel west and then south through the main part of the lot, and then back up towards what would be the northeast. And then all the exits will be along Glencoe. That will be the only area that you'll be able to exit out of the parking lot. Now, the police. Obviously, we needed to, but we're going to have in and out traffic along that Glencoe Avenue entry point. also wanted to point also that this is the area that's designated for underground stormwater detention. That will have 55,000 cubic feet of underground detention. When this site was originally developed a number of years ago, we have never sort of been able to hold our own stormwater. That water generally drains off to the southwest portion of our property. We will now be capturing all of our stormwater and storing it underneath that wall. And there is excess capacity should any further development take place years down the road on the Hanley site. There is excess capacity built into the storm retention area. So that's the base of it.
Two questions. So on the exit, do I have to go north when I exit, or can I go south?
You can go south or you can go north.
Okay.
Along Glenville.
So you can go both ways there, okay.
And
then
go both ways.
Sorry, what?
Now keep in mind also this base bid does not have the alternate where we would have parking along Glenville. This also would have bus parking bus drop off within the parking. Actually bus drop off in the parking. Then if we take it once John, did I answer it?
Yes, so I can go north or south. And the next question is, so is my drop-off of buses now in this configuration where kids get off the bus and have to cross between cars and parents?
That's correct.
And today, just so I'm clear, in today's environment, that does not happen. Where?
No, it is happening. If you look here, this is your current parking lot. Buses come in here.
Right, but I don't have any cars dropping off kids, right?
Pardon me?
I don't have any cars dropping off kids in that parking lot.
There are cars that circulate through that area.
There are cars in there. Any number of people could be coming in.
There are staff arriving.
No, I know there's staff. I'm at Hadley. I've been there the last, 4 or 5 years. A lot. And so, you're saying that people use that parking lot to drop off your kids?
It's not the typical place. The place where you go, which is the horseshoe,
right, is
the typical place for parents to drop off.
Right here is where they typically will drop off. You will find traffic that scoots in through this entryway point right here.
Or the other entryway.
It just goes right, or the other. Coming in off of Glenville.
But how do you protect kids getting on the bus?
That's the issue that was asked of us by the police department. They asked us to explore the potential for relocating all of student drop off outside of the normal, outside the existing or proposed parking lot, and that's alternate C1, which I'll show bus drop off pickup out of the lot.
Bob, why don't you go ahead and finish the presentation,
sure,
and then board members may have questions that they want answered.
And so this is the base bid. Then this is a double shot here. We have the base bid, as you've just seen, and then we have alternate C1, which will provide for bus drop-off in the area between Hawthorne and our exitway on Glencoe. There's a couple of spots that will be built into easement here. And then the balance of the spots will be built in essentially from the driveway up north to pretty close to our property line. And that's alternate C1 where we will be creating a pull-off zone for buses to be able to pull off, drop the kids off, pick them up in the afternoon.
So that's
similar to like what we had with was built at Ben Franklin, correct, with the buses?
We worked with the village on that project,
right,
and everyone saw the result of that. It's been a much easier traffic pattern.
Right.
We detain all of our water on our property, and it was a great relationship that we had with the village in that project. Really turned out very nicely for us.
And I'm talking, though, in terms of the way the buses are pulled off, they come off to the side, and just the way generally,
yes,
I mean, it's much safer for the kids, and it's much better for traffic pattern for people, residents who live around that area.
And keep in mind, we only have 3 buses, and at Franklin, we have 18 buses for regular transportation.
Absolutely. I'm just suggesting, I mean, I'm just making sure that I understand that this is in terms of visual learners like myself, who that's what it's similar to, where it pulls off, the kids are off, and traffic can still, well, the bus is there, the stops end up, but technically it's a safer environment.
Absolutely. What we'll be doing is we'll be building theater essentially from like the sidewalk over to what would be the existing curb. We'll be taking that whole area out there and providing bus pull-off zone. I also did want to mention that during non-drop-off time, so from 8 to 9 in the morning and from 3 to 4 in the afternoon, that will be identified specifically for bus transportation. But outside of those hours, and again in the evening hours, we'll be providing for, this will be actually parking area. There's about 34 spaces that will be provided there. Now, if you, anyone that goes by Hadley and when there's an evening activity, weekend activity, knows what a premium parking is in that area. So this will give us 30 more spots, I guess you could call it, on our property, although this is an easy area.
So under C1, the buses do not arrive in that parking lot at all?
Correct. Transportation is taken completely out. Student transportation is taken completely out of this lot and lined up out here on Glencoe, which is the current practice in the afternoon, just not in the morning.
Specialized buses.
Designated area for them to drop off as well as pick up.
Special ed buses would still be in that red area.
They'll be coming in here. And then single lane of traffic off of Hawthorne will be restricted for special ed buses only. And we have about four vans, four smaller buses that pull in that area, use them regularly.
But for a bus drop off, the buses don't all drop off at the same time.
No, it's you know, every couple, you might get three or four that pull up all at once. You might get them rolling in every couple of minutes. You know, I would say there's a window of about 8 to 12 minutes where all 17, 18 buses are there, drop the kids, and they're on their way.
So is there, in one of these places, prefer, I'm just wondering about the lower spot, you drop them off, where are the students crossing to get out of the way of traffic? Or the in the parking lot?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have staff out in the parking lot that assist kids to get through the lot, scoot along through the lot instead of sort of people dilly-dallying or taking their time socializing. But the goal would probably be to bring them up here, and then there's a parking lot, a sidewalk that will bring them over right in front of the building. So our goal is to keep traffic and kids away from each other.
Bob, I'm here. On this diagram here, the inner triangle, is that green space?
Or this here?
Yes.
This is the underground detention.
Right.
So, and then on top, it'll be green space, correct. And then also, as the village requested us to do, we, during our final submittal process, we were required to sort of redefine our parking spaces. We originally proposed 19 to 19 and a half foot parking spaces. The village asked us to go back, redesign sort of the exterior, the perimeter of this area, so that they'll accommodate 17-foot parking spaces, and which allowed us to pull this lot in 2.5 to 3.5 feet, providing for more green space, but not affecting the number of parking spaces available in that main lot.
Now, the way the bid was set up, the base bid and the alternate C1 is... Are there many different ways of approval? Say, for example, we could approve the base bid and not the alternate C1, or vice versa?
No, the bid was structured, so you can accept the base bid by itself, or you can accept base plus C1. You can't just take C1 without the base. I don't think I can find a contractor that would be willing to give us the amount of work that's done just for this area here at the price that's indicated. Because this project here is, you know, we get out of school that past week of May. Our intention, should this project move forward, is we're going to start that first week of June, and we'll get it done, but it'll be around that first week of August if this is completed. And we'll still be doing work up until school starts. But the majority of the bid documents were structured, so the majority of the construction is during a very condensed time frame of about 7 to 8 weeks. And we did, you know, a project very similar to this morning, a few years ago. It came out very well. just a chart that I was asked to have revised showing what the existing park is. We had to say about 118 spaces versus approximately 160 spaces with alternate seawall.
But the thing I was going to say is C1 is parking on our property, but it's still on the street. But in theory, you can still park there without C1.
No. This, well, to go back here, the parking, there is no parking on Glencoe, on the east side of that street. There are no parking signs on that street.
Not at all.
There is no parking. Unless it's parked illegally, I don't think you'll see a car.
Yeah, I mean, that's down where my house is, and during the day, light hours. If people are parking because the lot's full, they'll go down Madison, Thomas, you know, the streets that are to the left, but they don't park along there. Glenbard West La Crosse, 2 years ago, started, we have a reciprocal partnership with them for girls lacrosse, and so they practice there, and then in the afternoon, there are cars that drop off, but then they park on Maple, is it? Right around the corner, or Marion, yeah. And so again, they get off that main road and then park on side streets. So the parking, you know, we had that special finance meeting. Thank you to the finance committee for doing that last Thursday. And I know that this question came up. I think I had sent it to Bob. But the parking along Glencoe is similar to what we have at Forest Glen, to the extent that those are like angled parking. They're kind of on our property but off the road. So that's the picture that I'm kind of having of this.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Same type of concept.
But we also said that we'll be responsible for snow removal, et cetera, and you had said that the district would take care of that with our own plows. And
that's what we do.
Yeah,
we do
with our own. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of that.
I did want to mention that late this afternoon, I did get a call from a resident who lives right, as a matter of fact, her name is Kate Rafferty. She resides in 1743. Marion Court, Ms. Rafferty, was very much in agreement with the base bid. She was unhappy with the alternate C1. And this is my interpretation of what she was saying. She did not want to see drop-off along Glencoe. She thought there were better use of district funds. And I walked her through a number of issues that sort of I presented here and discussed with the finance. She said that she had kids, I believe the last one graduated in about 1989. They have this site, it's been around the district for years. And as a resident, she has never seen any specific safety concerns for kids in that lot. And she did, my sort of gut feeling is that she would much rather have seen all the parking for handling take place on our property. In other words, right in front here, more particularly, it would be in this area here. Sort of bring the parking in off of Glencoe altogether and place it in a, you know, this is all sod and grass.
So take that green space and pave it.
Yeah, take the green space and probably create a drop-off zone on our site. That's my interpretation. Mm-hmm. I told her that I would let the board know that she called and she voiced these concerns. So I believe I've captured what are concerns. Any other questions?
I would have thought, based on the session we had at Hadley, I would have thought that residents of that area would like to see one because it takes the buses off the street so that they have more thoroughfare there. It also then creates more parking for after school activities so that the people aren't parking in front of their houses. Is that a fair assessment of
that's what I heard.
I heard
that's what I heard, yeah.
Well,
that was one community member that thought I heard.
This was just the lady that called me.
No, I understand. I'm trying to say that sort of conflicts with what I thought I heard happening. I'm trying to confirm with the other people that were there. That
they did.
Heard happen,
right? I agree. That's what we heard.
I would say that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
So that's all I have for this topic this evening, then.
We're going to the zoning variance.
The zoning variance
can you speak up just a little bit? We couldn't hear you.
Oh, I just asked what the zoning variance was for.
experience?
When that lot was constructed, we exceeded the way the parking lot was originally designed is much greater than what is typically allowed for a parking lot of that size on that particular spot. We are actually supposed to be creating, instead of like three or four foot easement, there's supposed to be about a 30 foot easement, which would significantly impact the number of spaces, probably about one quarter of what we anticipate being able to park there. So we're going for a variance, asking that they allow us to exceed what their normal code would require, which would be a 30 foot easement versus a 3 or 4 foot easement. And that easement kind of varies both along Hawthorne as well as Glen Cove, because it goes on the diagonal. That's the zoning group.
Do you have any
zoning variance? And then we're also going to the city of Wheaton with an intergovernmental agreement, because we've asked for their authority to be able to construct this proposed C1 alternative in the easement that's typically a city property.
John?
Do you think you have agreement from the village on that zoning variance of the 30 feet?
I was more or less assured that if we follow through with their request, that this would be there would not be an issue.
And if you recall, that's why this bid was delayed, because the parking spots had been 19 and 19 and a half feet long, and Bob readjusted the bid to be 17 and 17 and a half feet long.
The bids were originally due back February 14th. They didn't come back until February 28th, so we could adjust the bid documents as the village had requested. Thank you,
Bob. The next item for discussion really relates to this topic, and Bob just referred to it, and that is the indemnification agreement for the Glencoe Street construction between Hawthorne and Thomas Road. So this is really an agreement with the village of Wheaton, or the city of Wheaton, rather than the village of Glen Ellen, which is where the zoning variance must take place. So as you know, we're dealing with two communities, and as Bob would describe it, most everything has been authorized to be done through the village of Glen Ellen. But because the C1 alternate is on Glencoe, that is an agreement we must have with Wheaton. I think it's pretty straightforward, and is simply an accompaniment to approving C1.
And this comes back to us on April 9th?
Correct. The next item for discussion are the annual student fees approval, and this has, as Bob has said before, been through finance, as everything goes through the three-step process, first to finance, board discussion, and then board action. Received one question today from Sam relative to the general cost or the amount of money that the district generates from the fees, which is approximately $350,000. These fees have remained static for the last 4 years, I believe.
4 years. Mm-hmm. And the reason I asked for that number is because I was questioning the need to assess the fees at all. So I think that that should be a discussion that we should have. I'm interested in seeing what could be done, or what could be changed, or what could be modified, if anything.
In terms of other expenditures, what we would take away?
Yes. How could we adjust our budget? What fees should remain? What fees are, activity fees, fees for calculators, fees for equipment, fees for supporting events, things like that, versus just a main fee. That was the reason I asked that question.
And could you clarify between what you mean by a main fee? Do you mean like the 56 $100 for kindergarten and early childhood versus the activity fee, which would be extracurricular activities?
Yes.
And are you asking why do we charge for extracurricular activities or
no?
No.
I'm asking, well, I guess the simple question is, why are we charging the basic fees?
The basic fees. Okay.
Right. And why did we come up with that number, and can we adjust it, and can we adjust our budget to do that, next year's budget? Or
so
are you looking to subsume those to have the district pay for all those fees per child?
I am.
Okay. I just want to understand what you're asking.
So,
I think every time this comes up, at least some of us are like, you know, our taxpayers pay a lot of money already, here we have another fee. You look at $115, that's sort of the equivalent of your tax bill going up, I know it's federal or, you know, for different people. I think I remember at one point, one of those things is for a calculator. I believe that was in the fees. I don't remember if that's right or not, but obviously, you know, I don't know that we're going to provide calculators for every kid. Maybe he's trying to understand what's in these fees to say, you know, should we really be charging those? Is that, would that help, Sam, to understand what's in these fees, what they're paying for?
I think it would help me, yes.
The revenues go into the general fund. They do not pay for any specific item. They are simply considered, you know, almost like a user fee that are not. We don't say this goes for paper for this or this is used for this particular product. So that's the best, most specific answer I could probably give you in terms of where those go.
Yeah, I would echo that too. I remember when I first came on the board trying to understand that. I mean, I get the activity fees because there are additional costs for the leaders of those activities, but not, you know, never quite understood the basic fee, why that's why it is what it is.
What's it at the high school? It's like
pretty high.
It's really high. I mean, well, there's the teacher.
Yeah,
everything. Whatever's said. I mean, everything is itemized,
yeah,
basically.
No, and I know it's more, and the only reason I'm asking is because it's not like where you, I just want to point out that we're not unique in requesting a fee for public education. I mean, I the high school, I know when I talk to people with high school, it's several $100s.
Yeah.
Well, including books, including all kinds of things. So
it's $130 per sport, per season.
Right. And so we're not unique in what it is. And if I remember correctly, it does not pay for things like calculators and specific items.
The calculators for 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade are purchased through us, but the student owns that.
Right.
They're not on loan or anything like that. The student is buying them. Right. So 4th grade, they buy them. 4th grade, they use it. 4th and 5th grade, and 6th grade, they buy another calculator. And they use it in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Now, if they lose it, they have to buy another one. But we provide it a discounted, instead of making it part of the supply list, telling parents to go out and buy a TI-15 or TI-30, we provide it and they buy it through us to pass through.
So, but it could also include something such as part of the fee for the buses for a field trip that...
No. No. They had explained the basic fee basically is a general fee charged just to, it doesn't pay for any specific item. If there's a field trip fee that's charged, that's, you know, that's calculated for that grade level taking that trip to come up with the first student cost. And that's a fee that a parent pays outside of that. There are some field trips that the district pays for because they're part of the curriculum. So it's, you know, like I said, there is not a direct.
Yeah, we couldn't itemize that and say. I mean, it could be an example that district required field trips come out of that fee, but we don't collect it
and say
we don't itemize.
Right.
So why, I guess, and maybe I'm confusing that I actually pay more. I thought it had a, like, we got safety glasses.
Right, but
there are certain things you buy.
Okay, so that's an addition to this.
Correct.
You can reuse them if you have multiple students.
Correct.
And yes, non-siblings, and also family, they buy their lock. So when they get to the 8th grade, they have an extra combination lock to use in another gym locker in a private gym center.
So
I guess for me, then that just calls this even more into question. You know, why do we feel we need to do this? I don't know. I guess I don't know what we're funding anymore.
It's a revenue source.
It's a revenue source, but we've also not increased revenue source over the past
4 years.
It's remained stagnant.
We've kept the basically static. The only thing that's increased are the tax reviews because that's an assignable cost. That's more we have to return to the student for. Just to cost more because we get the fee that we're paying divided into to sell the actual child. So that's the only thing that has changed over time.
It's certainly not an untypical practice. Districts, I don't know of a district that doesn't charge fees. I can't think of one either. But
didn't we do it one time too? I think we looked at our member districts, the associated districts of the Glenbards, to see. I think Bob, you had provided that for us. Maybe it was 3 or 4 years ago now. Yeah, just to see, because we called the question. You know, are we in parity at a minimum, and you know, what are we doing with it? So, fair question, Indiana.
Well, and it's certainly a worthy discussion. If the board does not have an interest in charging fees and would want to see that revenue stream removed from the budget, that's certainly you have the ability to take action on this particular item. We have not adjusted our budget to recognize that, and feel it's been a stream of revenue that's,
Maybe an opportunity to look at it now that, we have a policy in place for our reserves, and so we've talked about what do we do when money is above that reserve level. So maybe there's an
opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I find that the way it is, a small percentage of your overall expenses, something's gone. What are you going to say to parents that just finished paying fees for 6 kids and they eliminate it? I mean, I think we're talking to a lot of parents of students who would say, great. But there's probably a lot of other people who would say, it's just, that's just the way it's been. There's always a trade-off between user fees and paying for it communally. But I don't think it's worth a big discussion to radically change it. And students that have financial problems can't. There are issues to help the fees. There are other things.
With students who are on economic waivers do not pay fees. That's a federal law.
Right.
And students who are experiencing difficulties can set up a payment plan with the district. And
so I would ask, is the plan that you don't think it's fair that people that can't afford fees are paying them, or do you just feel we should unburden parents from fees? What's your main impetus?
If you're asking me, I think we should unburden everyone, not just the...
But you're pushing burden out to the whole tax base. The cost isn't going away. You're just pushing it somewhere else. It's not a user fee anymore.
Well, Steve, I would disagree. I mean, if we did not hit the max on our levying or below it, and then we raised it because we did not charge the fees, I'd agree with you. But if we're not changing that, then, what's the point?
You're just reducing your revenue starts.
Right.
And is that a goal that you'd like to see occur in the district? Reduce the revenue? Would that be a part of... Is this an isolated reference to that, or is that something that we would tie into larger conversations that we should, as an administration, be looking at?
Now that we have the new fiscal philosophy in place, we've talked about reserves that exceed that amount, what are some things that can be to do with that? I think this might be a good example of that.
But if you're taking $350,000 paid by parents of students right now and pushing it off, it's got to come from somewhere. Even if you reduce the levy, it's still pushing it out to the whole tax base.
No, you would simply be reducing your budget by that amount.
Right. Yeah, and then
your expenditures by that amount.
In having this conversation, the bigger question is how we look at the budget in total. Bob's been providing us with our age and obsolescence and our capital plan, and the thing that, and I think it's a worthy discussion. I'm not suggesting that it's not. I think it's a discussion that has to be connected to our budget discussion, because we know moving out that we have capital expenses, as Bob has pointed out, on roofs, et cetera. So while this might seem like a small amount, when I look at it year on year, if we take that money out and it's gone, how does that impact
you know, the budget and holistically, I guess.
And so. I think timing-wise, I think, Dan, you raise a great point in terms of the fiscal philosophy and how, if we're above that amount, what are the things that we could do to then reduce that or slow that down. We've talked about that being a conversation when you know where you've arrived at the end of your fiscal year, and it would be for the following budget year. So is that in line with your thinking of timing?
Well, I guess now that we have the philosophy in place, we'll be preparing the budget over the summer. So
well, we'll be preparing a draft budget for your consideration probably beginning in April and May.
So, yeah, I think that now it's in place. I guess I'm looking for in the next budget.
For next year.
Right, to see that.
I guess just, you know, I think Steve brings up a valid point that, you know, either the people that are using it pay for it, if it's a revenue source that we need, or you push it out through the tax,
mm-hmm.
you know,
one way or the other.
Taxpayer community. That's a valid point, something that should be discussed. For me, also, because I haven't been for these forever, but it's also just kind of a customer service thing. You know, you pay once and you're done, and keep having to pay for this and pay for that. You got two or three kids in school, you're spending another $250. You got someone in high school, then all of a sudden it's another $500-$600 for education. It just seems like we're always hitting people, and it's just another something people have to do as opposed to just pay your tax bill and you're done and move forward. So
but you're paying your tax bill for however long you live in Glen Ellyn, or you can pay fees while you're a student in school.
Yeah, I mean, it's
got to come from somewhere.
So if it does, then it's the argument of do you spread it out across the base or the people that use this little valid discussion.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking a little bit about process, and this item will come back to you for decision mm-hmm. for next year unless you are asking for us to table it, in which case we wouldn't be bringing it back. But there are two ways to go about this. If you want, you believe we must have a deeper discussion now around fees specifically, taking out Dan's comment about the fiscal philosophy and just isolating fees, which is what I'm hearing this discussion about, you can take a vote on it next board meeting and see how that vote plays out and wrap then this conversation into the fiscal philosophy, in which case it could be removed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you could take action now, continue your conversation around fiscal philosophy, and then if you decide later, we just bring, you know, we undo your vote or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this has some impact on registration and information that
mm-hmm.
comes out, correct?
Definitely.
So I'm thinking,
does.
Again, just timing out all of the registration yeah. packets. I mean, all
well,
that.
Well, we send our invoices in July. I mean, so we'd have.
Well,
I'm sorry.
From a process perspective, you need us to vote on this next meeting, and then however that vote turns out could drive whatever it was.
The next conversation. Yeah,
future conversation.
The budget.
I don't want to, I want to make sure that we're representing what the board would like us to do, whether it's just move the vote forward next month,
mm-hmm.
and then depending on how it is and depending on what we talk about with budget development and our fund balance, that we further that conversation. Is
mm-hmm.
that comfortable with everybody?
That makes sense.
Okay. Okay. Last item for discussion is the continuation of the pre-K program. You have a board report as well as board members. I provided you some additional data that looked at performance of our students in the pre-K at-risk program. And also I identified for you the percentage of students who are still with us in the program as of third grade. And so as you know, we have indicated to you that we believe this is a highly valuable program, a program that without its operation in the district, our students serve to be increasingly challenged over the course of the next several years, whether they stay with us or don't stay with us. But those students who enter kindergarten who have not had a pre-K experience with us serve to be at a significant disadvantage from their peer group, and that disadvantage doesn't end with kindergarten, but in fact the gap increases as they continue to grow. And conversely, students who have pre-K experiences, we see evidence that the gap diminishes the longer that they are in our system.
As a result of the pre-K average level, right?
We believe that giving that pre-K, I mean, you know, to say it's cause-effect exactly,
well,
obviously.
It's one of the factors.
It's clearly a factor. You've given students who otherwise have disadvantaged environments for any number of risk factors that are identified both by law and by our assessments, but they are less ready than many of their.
And I would assume, tell me if you're wrong, I don't know, we have data on this, but I would assume that if I'm in pre-K, because everyone always looks at the business case of what it costs, right? But if I'm in pre-K at risk program, I come into our school system, there's probably less of a cost associated with that student in the time they're actually in the K through 8.
Absolutely.
Because of that money spent before, whereas if they, those that didn't, there's probably more of a cost. So
absolutely.
I know it's probably hard to measure that business case, but I think we should look at this as it's more than just the cost of pre-K. There's some savings that comes downstream, which makes this even a better investment.
Absolutely.
Than what it actually costs.
And there is good research to show that early intervention reduces the number of students who actually enter special education services later on. And again, cause effect, you know, is not exact, but the cost of educating students either in intervention programs throughout their career or special services is obviously going to be a more expensive proposition.
The program kind of plays until 1. And last year was the first year that it was unfunded by the state?
That's correct. Well, it's always been partially funded by the state and partially funded by the school district. None of our programs are totally funded by any revenue source. But you're right. Until last year, we received increasing funds from the state for pre-K at-risk programming, which you have also in one of your charts.
Can I ask, are there any board members who are feeling that we should not continue to fund this program? Okay, could you help us understand where you're coming from? Because we are, could you help me understand?
I have an issue. This is a state-funded program, and the state stopped funding it. I don't think that it's appropriate that we should be funding a state program.
There are many programs that the state mandates. Now, this is not a mandated program. There are many programs the state mandates us to do that they offer us no money for.
Can I just say, is gifted a state mandated program?
No.
So we fund gifted program, even though it's not a state funded program. These are our kids. This is not even a question for me. These are our children. Whether, regardless of where they live, they are within our borders, they are our kids, and there should be no question that we would fund this. Just, you know, if you want to look at it from John's business case perspective, and I know you were just presenting that from another as a positive. I guess as a board member, I have a very difficult time equating these children as dollar signs because they're kids, and. You can't put a dollar sign on these kids. Sorry. And
you know, I had asked Ann when we had our president's meeting, was it 2 weeks ago, whether or not we should contact Representative Pihos because she's on the Education Committee, and you know, anytime we've met with her, she's always telling us, make your voices heard, make sure we know what your interests are, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm wondering, you had said you
I did. I sent an email to Chris Cook, our state superintendent, who didn't respond to me yet, but maybe he will, and Sandy Pihos, with whom I spoke today. And she really has no insights at this point on what the budget will be providing, and that conversation is probably down the road, late May, if we're lucky and the legislature can actually agree on a budget. She did say that, you know, it's very unclear as to what they'll support or whether additional resources will be given to the budget request that ISBE has made. But she did say that as a member of the Education Committee, she would do a little investigating into the grant into the possibility of whether or not we would be eligible to reapply. Because as I've explained to you, for us, the real downside is if there's no funding, then nobody gets funding. The fact is we applied for the grant last year and were denied the grant. And in that denial, we were also told you can't ever apply again, which if it's a competitive grant, you should be able to apply every time the grant comes up and it's a clean slate and everyone gets an opportunity. That's the way competitive grants work typically. And so that's the lens with which I approached Representative Pihos to find out what rationale there could possibly be for not opening the grant back up to school districts that had not received the grant dollars. And so we'll continue to pursue that avenue, but you know, we believe we funded it this year at the tune of about $350,000, and we believe that that expenditure is an expenditure that is well worth the resources that we have, and we've been able to do it without detriment to any of our other programs. We believe the results that we can demonstrate in terms of student learning and their gains over time are representative of a successful program.
Does anybody not have one? Are there any districts that don't have this program?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot that don't. I think that's the whole issue in looking at some metrics. It's kind of wrong with looking at metrics. I don't think anyone's against helping out children who need help. But there are, you know, it doesn't make any sense that you apply for this grant and you've got a basis for identifying a 3 or 4 year old pre-kindergartner who needs to be in this program. Well, if one district, they say, well, you're wealthier and you're not, they're going to give money for that district. But it's still the same 3 and 4 year olds. So it just says, okay, Glen Ellen, you're going to now fund this program that's really a state program, whereas another district doesn't have to negate state aid for it.
I don't disagree. I mean, I think it's absurd that the state is looking at it from that perspective. I just personally am having a hard time. If you're going to make me look at it from a cost perspective, fine. John's right. The cost of trying to get that child who did not have pre-K, whatever district they may have come from, wherever they came from, they are now ours. And if they didn't have these opportunities and did not have these exposures, what does it cost us to then bring that child up to speed? Well, and I think, I guess for me, if you want to look at it from that perspective, that, you know, think about that. Would it be better for us to, you know, I guess I'd look at it from a maintenance perspective. We maintain our buildings in a preventative way. We do things before it breaks so that we don't get to that point where it costs us triple what it could have if we had just done it right the very first time and been a little bit more proactive. I look at this as being proactive with these kids, that we are bringing them into our buildings. We are exposing them to school. We are meeting with their families. This is not about educating just one child. This is about educating families. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that this district should be awfully proud of, what we've done over the years. So the fact that we started with, you know, 24 or 40 kids, and now we have 80. I mean, that speaks volumes. I'm looking in the back, and we have some of our teachers here. I mean, if you want to talk to somebody who's on the front line to see the impact it makes, that's what we're here for. We are in the business of kids.
I think, just so I can understand your point of view here, too, right? What I think I heard you say is, I don't know that it's so much that I'm hearing him say about money. I'm hearing him say philosophically, this is a program that was funded by the state. It's not required. They've been funding it. Now they've decided to drop it. And I think what he's saying philosophically is, you know, that those, and I don't know the words in my mouth, but what I think you're saying is philosophically, this is not something that you think we should move forward with because it's no longer funded and it's not really part of what the state is asking us.
That's
what I think I heard you say, and
I don't think it's so much about the dollars as the, you know, the state's approach with all this, and you know, how many programs do we need to fund for the state programs? The state stops funding. I mean, is it, would you start with this one? Is there going to be another one? Are going to be
transportation is a perfect example of that, because chances are the state is going to remove funding for transportation, but it will be a law, and we'll have to continue funding it. We know that other mandated programs are not fully funded. Special education is a perfect example of that. We receive very little funding from the state for special ed reimbursement. Our bilingual program, ELL services, we get some money from the state, but reduced money. Our state aid, our GSA, is in danger. So I think you're right to the extent that it could just be a pile on over the course of the next couple of years, and those will require larger conversations for us as it relates to how do we use the resources we have. What I've indicated to you is that we have the resources to continue this program. It is a program that I believe John said makes a good business case with the oncoming demands of the Common Core, which I think I gave you as one example here. Students will be required to enter kindergarten at a much higher level than they have had to in the past, and students who come to us at a deficit are going to be even more significantly at a deficit if they're not given a chance to get that early intervention and that early education. And I think Tara has made an excellent point as well, that this is not a program just about educating students, but it is a program about educating families and helping families understand that they are their child's first best teacher.
Dan has a question.
Well, I know when we had talked about this before, we had asked about the feeder districts, what they did. I mean, what was the percentage that did or did not do?
Well, all the feeder districts except District 89 have received some pre-K at-risk funding, and they have programs at different levels, some as low as 20 students and some as high as 80. Some have exceeded. There are some districts outside of the Glenbard feeders who are serving students higher than that, more students than that. District 89 has never received pre-K at-risk funding, and so we're not eligible to apply last year for funding, and so they do not have it. They've never had it.
They never had the service for that.
They have a early childhood program that is a blended model between early childhood special education and typically developing tuition paying students.
But that's not at-risk pre-K.
It is not.
Do they have any at-risk pre-K students?
No.
You would think, though, they would have some percentage of students with the same criteria that we do.
But they weren't eligible. They didn't receive the grant when it was an entitlement grant.
Right.
They weren't eligible to apply for the grant last year.
And they're not using district funds to create a program.
Correct.
Drew, I understand philosophically where you're coming from about regarding the state. I really do. However, this district, this community, would not stand for the board to eliminate the gifted program that serves an extremely small number of kids compared to the rest of our population. The state, it's from a political perspective, the state, when they... Our legislatures have a way of constantly adding on unfunded mandates because it sells. It gets people to vote. It gets people riled up. Yet it's usually on the backs of something else that they take away. So they keep putting more and more requirements on us from an education perspective, but they don't give the school districts the money that they need to fund those programs. We're seeing it with the county. They close. I mean, they do it all the time. They pass things on the backs of kids because they don't vote. And it happens day in and day out. But we have an obligation to educate children. And as Ann said, it'd be one thing, I'd recognize that if we were in dire financial straits right now, but we're not. And we've done an excellent job with our finances. And I, you know, just because the state doesn't do what's right for our children doesn't mean that we shouldn't. It's our job to do what is right for them.
Are there any tuition-based pre-K?
We do have some tuition-based, but they're not considered at-risk students. They, again, are typically developing students who would be in our blended program, which we had a presentation. I'm not sure, Sam, if you were on the board yet. We had a presentation last spring about it. blended with early childhood special education, our pre-K at risk, and a certain number of students who are tuition-based students. And that's brand new, that blended program for us. So we're in our second year of it, and our tuition-based students are not, we're not at capacity on tuition-based students, but that's an increasing area for, which it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't offset the program costs significantly. We also get, I think, $150 per student if they are bilingual. And, of course, the majority of our students are bilingual, but or speak a second language. But $150 per student doesn't equate to a lot. We are funded in our Birth to Three program for the parent educator, and we will continue to be funded in that because we've already been granted. So which isn't a large sum of money either. But we will continue the Birth to Three, but we would have to drop off then services once the students turn through.
You know, I asked the question the last time, so thank you for putting it in the board report about the Common Core, because that is such a large part of our long-range plan and our, the direction that we're going in. So, you know, to John's point about you support now or you do things later to mitigate the lack of support is what I think is, something that's really important for me on this, because we've done so much work. And I brought up Head Start the last time we spoke about this too, which is a program that's been around for a long, 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 long time. And the premise of Head Start was to do just that. And we know by metrics within that program alone that has made a huge difference for kids coming into public schools. Are they going to migrate in and out of District 41? Yes, they will. But we're also going to be picking up children who hopefully have had pre-K at risk. So when they come into our school, they're at that level. And, we asked the question of Ann, is this funded for next year? She and Bob said yes, it's already been built in. We know that. So, I think part is accountability, and the other part is, responsibility. I understand what you're saying, Drew. I've had my own frustration over the years with lots of do this, this, and that, but do it and figure it out in terms of the cost. And that is very frustrating, which is why I wanted us to talk to Sandra Pihos. You know, we do very little calling on her, and I think this is something that we were particularly angry about in terms of not getting the grant, and I know that Julie was really disappointed. So it's time to raise our voice as a board and say, step up. So we'll see what happens.
So the question before the board is, are you comfortable without formal action in moving the program forward, or do you feel like you need to take action to fund the program for another year, in which case that would be significant for us to know tonight because it will impact our personnel report in the April meeting. So if
you need us to take action, we could vote tonight.
I don't think you need to take action, but if you feel the need to, we could move it and take ask to take action on continuation. But if there's enough consensus that the majority of the board is supportive, then it's not necessarily required.
I'm fine with maintaining the students that we're doing. I think you had said before, as long as you've got one teacher and you've got a classroom dedicated, you're going to have 20 students in the morning and 20 in the afternoon. So if you're going to have a program, you're going to have 40. If you have another classroom, you're going to have 80.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to have 90. We're not going to...
Stop it.
Right.
Because
we take our 80 most needs.
Right. I suppose we could do 90 because the parameters of the grant are no longer with us. But it wouldn't be good
teachers,
education.
And we've got two dedicated classrooms, and we have a bunch of portables. So there is a opportunity cost to housing this program.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not against it, but I'm saying there's nothing wrong with discussing metrics involved with it.
Yep.
You know, like I said, we can have this issue about us talking about it or maybe eliminate it, but again, we have districts that don't even offer it, and they definitely have students that would qualify for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right around us.
I don't disagree that doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know if you have consensus for that? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
You can do a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay.
Are we comfortable with that?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Consensus?
Yeah, that's Drew, are you comfortable with us moving forward for another year?
It's the
will of the board?
The will of the board, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Drew. Okay, thank you very much. That is our final discussion item for this evening.
Okay, upcoming meetings. April 9th, 2012, regular board meeting, 7:30 back at Central Services Office. And then April 16th, we have a special meeting at 5:30 p.m. at Central Services, which is the Board of Education self-evaluation, which we do with a representative from the Illinois Association of School Boards. So we're looking forward to that. Any other matters to be considered by the board? Any other matters? Okay. Okay. And then public participation. Yeah.
I have one question about the heavy parking lot. After looking at those pictures, the new bus lane on Wendo in the morning, will they have their stop signs out? And will they go all the way to the front? And then, so you won't be able to have a Wendo for that 15, 20 minutes in the morning, similar to the 30 minutes in the afternoon?
We believe that the signs have to be up. We were going to check that with IDOT, but I believe the signs do have to be up.
That's a very used road in the morning, and I think you're going to, I take that road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I'm coming down, right, and I see the buses, I go down Thomas, and then
I think especially when you're sending people out, and those buses are there, you're going to, if your parking lot's going to be filled with parents who can't get out because they can't go right, they can't go left because the bus lines are out. So I think you really need to take a closer look at lining that street. If we have to have it signed out.
You know, mm-hmm. That's what we're checking. Happy with the rule is. Thank you.
Yep. Always complicated. Every
okay.
I didn't want to say
Just yes. Jody, announce who you are.
Okay, Jim Collingport. I'm a Ben Franklin parent. And I have one question and one point I'd like to make. With the LLC tech team, did you guys have discussion as part of board and why did you discuss these items tonight that we missed by not being? That I missed.
No, it was a personnel matter, so it was discussed in closed session.
Okay. And then my second point is, and I'm not making an assumption you didn't do this, but the trend we're seeing in all the PTA, the schools that have high volunteer participation and low, is it getting lower and lower as people go back to work, especially at the new grade levels, kindergarten, first and second. So if there was any part of the decision that relied at all on parent volunteers,
did not.
Just be sure to completely neutralize.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Tony. Great. Anybody else? Great. Thank you. Thank you for coming tonight, too.
And staying,
buddy. And staying. And listening. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. The appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Aye.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Henry?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Yes, and the board will take action upon return from closed session on the personnel report.
Right here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Open session. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Great. We have one action item in open session, the personnel report. May I have a motion to approve the March 12th, 2012 personnel report as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
I'm sorry. Who's second? Sam, did you second?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Von Drack?
Yes.
Mr. Kemblin?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard? No. Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Adjournment. May I have a motion to adjourn the January?
Motion. Second.
Wow.
We're not following. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.